Welcome to this episode of Stories of Hope by Kangaroo Minds. I am Vedika, and today we have with us Hannah Workman. Hannah has a lived experience of BPD, ADHD, and anxiety. Hannah is also a mental health support worker and a mental health advocate who uses social media to spread awareness about mental health and to get the conversation going. Today, before we begin to hear more from Hannah about her journey, I'm going to put out a trigger warning for our audiences. If at any point during this episode, should you find yourself feeling triggered or distressed, we urge you to please take a step back and look after yourself. Should you need any additional support resources, you can also find them on our website. And now, without taking more time, I'm going to hand over to Hannah. Hannah, welcome to the episode, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more from you about your experiences and your journey.
Thank you for having me. It really means a lot. And I'm looking forward to sharing, hopefully, to other people about like my journey and like hoping it will help others.
I think, you know, as you said, and as we also spoke about earlier, was that the whole point of having stories of hope is that it helps people to feel less alone in what they're going through. So I think that's the aim today, to, you know, have you, and I know you've been such a huge advocate. You always shared your story online as well. With that, do you want to tell us a little more about, you know, your journey with your mental health and what has recovery looked like for you?
Yeah, so I think for me, like my journey started properly, like more so in adulthood. And I started my account in 2017. Mm-hmm. So I think that's 4 years ago now. I don't know, time goes so quick, I just lose that. So I started mostly during adulthood with my journey, although I was under like children's mental health services from the age of 12 to 13, which I was diagnosed with anxiety and also ADHD. Although I wouldn't say my journey started properly with my mental health during those years, just because I didn't really receive much support during like CAMHS. I just had sort of an antidepressant and also ADHD medication, and was seen sort of every 2 weeks. But there wasn't like any real therapy or treatment other than just basically talking. And it just wasn't exactly any major support for me. So it wasn't until 2017 when I started to really struggle with like low mood and just sort of self-harm, and I just really struggled to go to work every day. I just felt really unmotivated, and it got to the point where I just couldn't even get out of bed, and my mum just didn't know what to do with me, and I didn't know what to do with myself. So we actually took a trip to A&E, and I seen the like on-call psychiatrist, which sort of started my journey with adult mental health services. And I think from there is sort of where like I spent a few years in and out of like primary mental health services, trying to sort out medication and the right therapy plan. And it just kind of took quite a few years from there, like different antidepressants and different like CBT programs, and nothing was really working very well for me. I think it was like 2 years on from then, or maybe like a year and a half, they decided that it clearly wasn't helping and that I needed to be referred to like their secondary mental health service, which is a like longer term like mental health service. And that's when I think at first it was sort of just them getting to know me and like my history of mental health. I think at that time I then had like the added diagnosis of I think it's called like dysthymia, which is in like long-term depression.
Right.
I think I'd been trialed with a few antidepressants at that point, and I then seen a psychiatrist who gave me an antipsychotic and was basically told my CPN, the psychiatric nurse who I was given through the like primary service, the secondary service even. She was then told to like refer me on for like psychological therapy assessment to see which therapy would be best, which took 3 assessments, which was like 3 hours long, which they decided at the time would be the right therapy for me would be a therapy called mentalization based treatment. I can't really explain like the details of what that therapy is, because although I'd done like the introduction treatment, which was 11 weeks, I didn't really find it helpful. So I think that was like 2019, and I was still very much struggling with like self-harm at this point, and then also like sort of started to like attempt to end my life. So it was clear to me that that wasn't really helping. So at that point I started to do, I paid privately for hypnotherapy between like my sort of reassessment for therapy with the NHS, which I found hypnotherapy like helpful to an extent. And I found it helpful, and I was also like on like an antipsychotic and antidepressant at this time. But then they decided to take the antipsychotic away. I'd actually started to work again at this point as well. But then it just sort of just didn't work out. And I think this is like one of the things, which is why I then realized I struggled with perfectionism a lot. Because I always started to put on like a lot of pressure on myself to like basically work on the recovery full time, just trying to full time, and like I just couldn't manage both. But in my head, if I wasn't managing both, it felt like I was failing at everything. And it took me a long, long time to realize that it wasn't going to be the case of I could do both at the same time. It wasn't until I had my like reassessment for therapy and was given the option to do like DBT, the dialectical behavior therapy. And even then, it wasn't until like 4 months in like working with my therapist that I was like, okay, right, I can't do both. Like, it really wasn't a great time in my life. Like, those 4 months, that's when I went into the crisis admission. Like, it was literally 2 years to, like, not this date, but, like, 2 years to, like, December. So, I was in crisis admission, like, this time 2 years ago. And I think for me, like, that time in the crisis mission really helped me to sort of slow down like my thoughts and really focus on what I need to prioritize. And it made me realize that like I have so much that I wanted to achieve because of my all or nothing like thinking. It was very much like, if I can't do it all at once, like I'm failing. I think it took me a long time to realize that it's not how like life works. Like I can't expect myself to achieve everything at once. Right. And I think like having DBT has been really helpful for me. And like my therapist was like just really, really good. And I think even like, cause I was meant to start like the program, like the full program, but then like because of COVID, it like was put on hold
right. For
quite a few months before they decided to run it like online, like over like sort of Zoom. So I thought maybe like in the March of 2020 that I would go downhill, but I for some reason I just didn't. Like it really seemed to do the opposite for me. I think because it felt like everyone in the world was in the same place as what right. I was, so it was like I didn't feel as alone as like I had been feeling. I felt I actually felt a bit more connected in a way, because it was like, well, everyone's sort of stuck in that same situation, and it helped me actually really focus on my recovery, because it didn't feel as big a pressure to have a job and to like, I don't know, I just didn't feel like that big a pressure.
Right.
It went. So it gave me that opportunity to really work on my journey at that point. And I think that's really what helped me like focus on like what I want to change and like what I need to like do to get me to work towards the goals that I did want to achieve, and like have that pressure to like do it all at once. So if anything, like yeah, I think the pandemic has obviously been awful, but at the same time it has been really helpful to me to have that time to just really like everything's been sort of slowed down, so I've had like less pressure on my brain sort of thing to really like focus and not feel like others are pressure, like it's weird, but I have that I feel like everyone's like pressuring me, but yeah. There's no pressure from anyone except for me. And I think that's why like it made me realize like I don't know, I think it made me realize like that's why I wanted to sort of, because once I'd had like that less pressure and I could worked on my emotions a lot better and like had been obviously in my therapy program for a year by this point, it sort of like hit me that like I still am struggling with like symptoms that weren't so much like BPD symptoms, but I couldn't really pinpoint what they were. But then I think for some reason like it just, I almost forget that I have a diagnosis of ADHD. And although it's not so much, it's not really a mental health diagnosis, obviously it does affect my mental health.
Right.
So it can appear quite a lot like I'd say it can appear quite similar to like some BPD symptoms. So I really wanted to, during my time with my therapist, sort out ADHD medication.
Mm-hmm.
And because of my previous experience during school, I was really put off because I didn't find that the ADHD medication helped.
Right.
And it actually gave me really bad anxiety and panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really worried for like that same thing to happen again. But so I was put on a different type, which I started in April this year. And I think, like, I was obviously really nervous about the idea of it, but the type of medication, like, it's still the same kind of medication, but like a different one. And it sort of just really helped me. And then, like, it's like taken that one layer off for me to do like the rest of my sort of recovery work with mm-hmm. like my therapist. So I've been able to focus on like things that had affected me from the past, which maybe I just hadn't really sort of grieved properly from or dealt with properly. And I think it's just helped me like so much with like being able to focus on the rest of like what I had to deal with, kind of thing. And like it's sort of got me into that place now where I'm able to rationally think things through.
Right.
And then I don't know, I just feel like a completely different person, like, but not like in a bad way,
mm-hmm.
just I feel like me, like,
right.
I think like by the time I'd finished group in July, I was feeling a lot more like, all right, I can actually manage this. Like, I don't need to like reach out for like self-destructive things. I don't need to like, I don't know, I just didn't need to like reach out for those like sort of old behaviors that I'd managed my emotions with, or just, I don't know, it's just nice. Like, and I was like feeling ready for like the discharge of like mental health services. And I think like my last sort of goal for like the like 2 sort of years that I, well, 2 and a bit years that I was under like the secondary team with, like, was to just get back into like full-time work.
Right.
And I sort of had like a blip, sort of maybe just in August. Like, it wasn't like a major blip, but like I was getting to the point where I was like, oh, my like discharge is very soon and I haven't achieved that, like,
mm-hmm.
I sort of started having like a lot of self-doubt again and feeling like, oh, like this isn't how I had it planned. And then like, I don't know, if I think like because I knew how much like perfectionism and that had sort of that control like throughout my journey, but like I was so much more self-aware of it at this point, like I just knew that it wasn't, I didn't need to let it control me. Like, I didn't need to, like, I didn't need for it to be, like, it didn't need to take control, basically. And I felt like I had control.
Okay.
Like, it wasn't like I needed to listen to those voices and like give in and like go to like self-destructive behaviors. But I think like, yeah, my goal was to go back to work, and I did take on a traineeship, I think towards the end, like July, August time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it did bring up quite a bit of anxiety because I hadn't worked properly for like I think it was coming up to 3 years. And I was thinking, oh, I don't know how I'm going to cope. But I think I just forget that I've learned so much during like my time in DBT,
mm-hmm.
that like I always have that initial I'm not going to cope. But because of like everything that I've learned and like that I do cope.
Yeah.
But it's putting myself in that situation first and like seeing for myself that I can actually cope with that, whereas like before I wouldn't have coped. But now like I've been working for 3 months, and if I like thought about that two years ago, even a year ago, I just would have been like, no, like, that's not possible.
Mm-hmm. So, Hannah, in your journey, I mean, you know, you've shared a lot with us about what it's been like, you know, with medication and the way perfectionism played into your recovery and all your learnings along the way. And you definitely have come a long way in terms of, you know, whether it's been the transition, whether it's been, you know, trying different forms of therapy as well, and then to now being able to, you know, work, which, as you said, was one of your goals, you know, at the end of the process. But what would you say have been, you know, some high and low points during this time for you?
I definitely think, like, for highs, like, it's been just those things that, like, I thought I wouldn't be able to
mm-hmm.
achieve. I have like not learning to drive, but like going back to driving again. Like I didn't think I'd feel confident enough to go back to driving again.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like something that I'm really proud of. I think for me, like the highs have just been like realizing that I'm capable of a lot more than like what I think I'm capable of.
Right.
I'd say like for me that the lows have been obviously like times where I have been like obviously I feeling like I'm not able to cope anymore. Like I feel like my only option was like to end my life, and I think that period of time for me was, it felt like forever. Like it felt like there was no end, and
mm-hmm.
it just felt like it went on and on and on, and that it was never going to get better, and I was just stuck like this forever. And I think although it was a major low, I think there is also the highs to it that were like I had really good support system around me, and I had those people that just didn't like give up, and like they helped me through it even when I didn't want to get through it. Like I felt mm-hmm. like there wasn't. Yeah, but like I think like the high now is like where I am now, like I it's still like not really settled in my mind that like I've actually got to the point where I am.
Mm-hmm. So you know, another thing as you said was you know, like you got through it and you had a lot of support from people around you. So can you tell us, you know, a few things that, you know, which people might have said to you, which were both, you know, helpful as well as sometimes not helpful? Because when it comes to supporting someone with a mental health condition, very often people don't know what to say or what to do. And either they may avoid the entire conversation altogether, or sometimes they may say things which really don't come out right. So if you could tell us a little bit about that.
I think like definitely it's like not to avoid like the conversations and just to be open and like even like it doesn't even have to be like saying like the right thing as such, but like I think just being able to like listen to that person and like sort of just being mindful that they're obviously having a really hard time and just to like be that listening support and just saying like I'm here to be like your support and just sort of like not like just empathizing with it, like trying to like think about how like you'd feel in that situation, and just sort of being like, I can totally understand like how, why you're feeling the way you're feeling kind of thing. And like seeing if there's anything you can do to like support that person. I think what doesn't help personally, like from like what I've had in the past, is just being like, oh, well, it's all right, like you'll feel okay like in a few days or like in a few hours, because like yeah I might do, but right now like in this moment I don't. And I think it's really important to focus on that moment and not just be like it sort of invalidates it for me.
I think another thing has been that, you know, you've used social media as well to spread awareness and to, you know, have the conversations around how you're feeling and how you're doing. So how do you think, like, you know, your experiences have shaped your work as a mental health support worker as well as all the advocacy that you do?
I think like it's been really sort of eye-opening like to see the conversations that do go on, because I think like I've been like sort of part of like the mental health community since 2017, and I think like when I first started my journey, like I didn't want to, like I felt really embarrassed, like I didn't want to like sort of put myself out there at all, like I wanted to remain like anonymous. Like I think as the time's gone on, like I've completely taken off the anonymous thing, and I think it's really important to just like share the ups and the downs and like everything in between, because that's what life is like we shouldn't have to just share the positives. And I think that's what's really helped me is seeing other people share like the ups and downs and like everything in between, because it shouldn't just be like all the ups, because it's not, that's not how it is.
And I think, you know, that's a very valid point that sometimes, especially when it comes to social media, we tend to forget that everything we see is not the entire story, right? Sometimes people don't put out their low points and you're just going to see highlights, and it makes it very easy to judge and put that extra pressure on yourself. Like, you know, even as you mentioned that you felt that there was pressure on you from other people that, you know, this is where you should be in terms of recovery, but it was just you putting that on you because no one was setting those benchmarks. And I think that's what social media somehow does that to you. We tend to get very caught up when we just see that people are doing just fine, and you know, why are we not doing well?
Yeah, exactly. I think definitely that social media does add to that perfectionism, because it's like a lot of people do just share like all the good parts of life, and then it adds to like, boy, definitely added to my perfectionism that, oh, why is it they can do all this, but then I can't?
And I think somewhere, you know, as you said, it not just adds to perfectionism in terms of how you're feeling and you putting that on you, but sometimes others around us also start to feel that, hey, look, here is so-and-so dealing with the same problems, and if they can do it, why can't you? So it sort of sets up for some amount of stigma, and as well as, like, you know, these false beliefs in terms of how people would be functioning.
Yeah, definitely.
But what would be something, for instance, that, you know, you would say that you now know that you wish you had known earlier?
I think for me, like, the main thing is, like, I can, like, there is, like, the opportunity to, like, get through the bad times, even when it feels like it won't ever pass. But, like, I think as well, for me, it's, like, knowing, like, how many other people do have their struggles but maybe aren't showing it online.
Right.
Because I think it just helped me feel so much less alone, because it felt like, for me, at the beginning of my journey especially, I felt very alone. I felt like there was hardly anyone who struggled with their mental health and had mental illness. And I think it wasn't until, like, obviously I joined the mental health community, I realized how many people did have, like, a mental illness. And I think even now, like, as I'm sort of talking about it more in the workplace and more, like, in general conversations, that I actually notice how many people in real life also have the same sort of, like, mental illnesses. And it was just helped me realize that, like, yeah, like, I'm not alone, really.
I think, yeah, that's a huge part of it, right? Like, when, I mean, number one is recognizing that people will share when they feel comfortable to talk about it. But at the same time, also just when you see people sharing, it somehow validates how you feel, and you feel like, you know, I'm not the only one going through this, and that there are people out there who understand, and it's very real. Then another thing, you know, you mentioned, Hannah, was that, you know, you tried out hypnotherapy, you tried out MBT, and then you were at DBT, and you were able to recognize that the help that you got initially was not really helpful for you. And see, that's a huge part, because firstly, a lot of people don't know how to recognize that, okay, this is not helping me. And, you know, how do you go about that conversation, and how do you ask for change? So if you want to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in all honesty, like, at the start, like, I had done, like, some CBT programs, and I think I'd done like a group CBT as well for anxiety, and I managed one session, and I couldn't cope with the idea of going back to it, because the sharing of, like, other anxiety at that point in my life, I couldn't take on, because it was just giving me more things to, like, have anxiety. And I just had to have that conversation with someone in the, like, therapy team at that time, and said, that's not going to be helpful for me. But I think it did close some doors, like, at that time in my life, because they were like, well, that's, like, the only thing we can offer you. And I think, yeah, it took me a long time to get to the point where I actually got, like, the right sort of therapy support in place, because I think it had taken about 5 years. And I think it's just having those conversations. Like, I'm happy to try things out and, like, see how I get on with it, but I think I had to, after that trial of the MBT, I just felt like it wasn't helping at all. Like I didn't feel any different from the start to the end. So, and I just didn't understand the idea of MBT at all. So when I had my reassessment, I did share that, like, that's how I feel. Like, I didn't feel like it was for me. And I personally felt like maybe the DBT program would be better suited to me, because that's how I, like, I always thought, like, when I was having that referral, that I was going to be having DBT. It wasn't ever mentioned that I was having MBT. But I don't know if that's because my mind was just set on having DBT, that I wasn't listening to, like, the MBT. But personally, I just had to, like, share my opinion that I didn't feel it would be best suited. And they also kind of agreed that it wouldn't be best suited to me at that time.
Right. And, you know, another thing in your case, which you did mention, was, you know, how you transitioned from child mental health services to the adult mental health services. And we hear a lot about it in the UK in terms of how the support varies between the two systems and things. So do you want to throw a little bit of light on how that transition was for you?
I think it was quite a, like, it was quite a different, like, I don't know, it was just really, like, it was almost like there was, like, not really much of a transition at all. Like, it was sort of like I started to see my CAMHS worker, like, less. Like, it went down from like every 2 weeks to like every month, and then it, like, every month to like every 3 months, and then to like a 6 month, and then I was just discharged. And to be honest, it wasn't even planned that I'd have like adult services. It was just because there was a self-referral for like therapy that I referred myself there, because my GP was like, oh, maybe give it a go. And I think it was just like, it was like not really much of a transition at all. It was sort of just like, okay, like, bye to like mental, like, children's. And then, like, as I went into like adults, it was like I just went, I had a like assessment for therapy, and then I just started like a program for CBT. And then it was not really a very smooth transition at all. It was just from children's to adults, like, and I think there should be a more transitional period, like something in between, because I'd been under CAMHS for like 3 years, and then just basically having like hardly any support for like 2 years, but like just the CBT programs. And I think it was quite a shock in a way.
Right.
But I think it wasn't until like I got under the secondary adult services that like it felt more like the transition in a way. Whereas like that in between period was just really like up and down, up and down. Like I was just being passed around to different people all the time. Like I don't even know how many like professionals I seen in that period, because there was just so many.
Right. I think, you know, Hannah, you've come such a long way in your journey, you know, right from the time you were at CAMHS to like now, and being a mental health support worker as well. And I'm sure like a lot of people watching this will definitely draw a lot of inspiration from, you know, what you shared and all the learnings that you shared. But what would be, let's say, you know, some parting advice that, you know, you would like to give anyone who's watching this or listening to this, who might be having a hard time with their mental health right now?
I think, like, definitely just to, like, take each day as it comes. Like, don't think about what you're going to be doing, like, in a week's time, a month's time, a year's time. Like, I think just take each day as it comes. focused on like what you're planning on doing that day, even if it is just literally surviving. And I think things fall together when they're meant to. Like, it's not, it, there's no rush for things to like be put like what you would class as like your sort of ideal life.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you for that, and thank you so much, Hannah, for taking out so much time and, you know, joining us today and sharing with us so many things that, you know, I'm sure will really make our viewers like relook at the way they look at mental health, but at the same time feel less alone in what they're going through. And lastly, for anyone who's watching or listening to this today, if you're having a hard time with your mental health, just know that there is help out there and things do get better. So please look after yourself. And till next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.